book of Exodus and chapter number 20 tonight. God, in His great providential timing, has allowed that we're going to finish up our series right before I'll be out of town next week. Exodus chapter 20. The Ten Commandments, or the Decalogue. The Decalogue means the ten words. The Ten Commandments. God thundering from Mount Sinai. I don't want to re-preach it, but just go back in your mind to the children of Israel having crossed the Red Sea, gone out into the wilderness, gather around this mountain, and there at the top of this mountain, there's almost like a volcano. There's lightning and thunder and clouds and darkness and fire and smoke. And then a voice thunders from heaven, "Thou shalt not," and goes down through until finally we reach this tenth commandment, this tenth word, and we'll study it together this evening. Exodus 20, verse 17, thundering from the top of the mountain, God Himself spoke to His people and said, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's." This tenth commandment, then, "Thou shalt not covet." I am well reminded of my own sin, if I may come right out of the chute and say it like this. One of the times that God really spoke to my heart, and one of the times that it became abundantly evident to me that I have covetousness that exists within my heart. I was about 15 or 16 years old. A young man that went to the same church that I did. He was a couple years older than we were. Chris Hayslip, and he came pulling in for church one Sunday morning, driving a brand new Eagle Talon. I don't even guess they still make them anymore, but man, was that that was a good looking car. It was sporty and it was all jet black and shiny. And as a young teenage boy, I looked at that and man, did my mouth just water. And I mean, I just wanted to stare at it and look at it, and boy, I'd have given about anything to drive it, but I remember my dad, we were all just standing around looking at it, and my dad just sort of walked right past and said, "Boys, thou shalt not covet." And boy, that eat me all up, because I can tell you one thing about it, there wasn't no denying it, I was doing some coveting. But I'd probably say I'm not the only one that's ever struggled with that, right? That we all do as we've made our way through these Ten Commandments. I hope that you have found yourself where you look at this, guilty, 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 over and over again, which is the purpose of the law. Again, it's not some stepladder we climb to glory, but instead it shows us our sinfulness. The law is our schoolmaster that brings us to Christ. The law teaches us where we have failed our God, where we have broken His law. And this particular commandment deals not with outward action, but with our inward thoughts and behavior. "Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness." These things are outward actions, but it's almost as if God puts this crowning jewel on the top of the Ten Commandments and says, not only do I expect obedience of the outward man, I expect holiness and submission in the inward man. "Thou shalt not covet." You see, you could sit here in the church house and nobody on this earth would know that you have a heart filled with covetousness. You know, we might know it if you go around lying to people a lot. If you were guilty of adultery, that may come to the light. If you committed some egregious sin, I mean, we may all know that. We may be obvious. You may not be able to hide that, but covetousness is something that goes on inside of us that God can see. And here's one of the real lessons to be learned as God thunders from Mount Sinai and He warns His people. not only do I know about your outward acts of disobedience, I know about the inward acts of disobedience. When you have a heart that is filled with covetousness, this particular commandment gives a list. Now, this is not a comprehensive list, nor is this intended to encompass all things, and really the close of the verse makes that clear. But there's a list of seven things in particular. If you look at verse 17 with me, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. You should not covet your neighbor's property, is a broad sense. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, his manservant, his maidservant, his ox, his ass, or anything that belongs to him. Anything that belongs to your neighbor. Now, who is our neighbor? Well, that's just pretty much anybody around us. Really, in truth, this commandment is not limited to only those that we come into contact with. In our world today, it's easy to covet people we don't even know. You turn on the television, you see certain lifestyles of, there used to be a TV show, right? Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. When you see certain people's lifestyles, when you see reality television, that TV, I don't know how much reality there is anyway in reality TV, but nonetheless, when you see their affluent lifestyles, it's easy to covet what they have. It's easy to, even somebody that's not, quote, your neighbor or next to you or near to you, it's easy to covet people who we don't even know in our society. Social media, we all do a real good job of social media pretending that our life is like this, putting on a good front. If everybody's life was as great as it is on social media, they'd have great lives, but it's not necessarily the case. Of course, you got other people on the other side who want to put all their drama on it, but that's another conversation. But we're commanded not to covet our neighbor, not to covet a stranger, not their property, not their spouse, not their servants, or not their affluence, we may say it like that. We're not to covet, if the put it in today's vernacular, we're not to covet their shiny new tractor, or old tractor as the case is. We're not to covet their nice new car. But then the close of this verse just says, just don't covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. Let me just, almost like God says, somebody's going to try to come up with some exception, so let me just say it like this, don't covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. Not their wardrobe, not their education, not their intelligence, not their job, not their toys, not their ski boat, not their nice new lawnmower. I mean, it's easy. You see your neighbor out mowing the lawn in his nice new zero-turn lawnmower. It's easy to covet these things and say, I just got to have them. Not their style, not their property, not their life. We are not to covet anything that belongs to our neighbor. What does that word covet mean? I promise you, this is probably not a word that you use a whole lot. None of us do, right? You're not going to turn on the evening news and they're going to talk about somebody who has a covetous heart. You're not going to say, well, today I coveted. We don't use this word a lot, but it is a good word. The word itself is not necessarily bad. It's just it can be used in a bad way. In other words, the word covet just means a strong desire. But as it is given to us in the commandment, it is a strong desire for what is forbidden. A strong or passionate yearning for something that doesn't belong to us. If you are overly eager to obtain something, the New Testament uses the word inordinate, and a consuming desire, a consuming passion to have something that does not belong to you. When you excessively yearn, when you obsess about something, I suppose it is a plague of youth to battle with covetousness. Teenagers get something in their brain. They just have to have it. And they dwell on it, and they talk about it, and they research it, and they bring it up, and they just, you know, as my mother used to say, son, you get on a horse and you ride it to death. You just don't let go. You just on and on. That's what covetousness is. It isn't. There's nothing wrong. Friends, there's nothing wrong with wanting nice things or wanting to improve yourself. But when it becomes a passion, an obsession, to where you're willing to break God's law in order to obtain it, then it's a sin. See, that's where really I think that this is like this crowning jewel on top of the Ten Commandments. Because just think about it like this. How many adulteries began as covetousness? How many men cheated on their wives on their husband, and it all began out of a heart full of coveting, wanting something that doesn't belong to you? Often it starts out innocent enough. Playful banter, a little bit of joking, laughter, quiet communications, these kinds of things. But then it becomes an obsession. It gets on the heart. It gets on the mind. And it just becomes a passion. And you begin to yearn. And it is something that is forbidden you. And it's not just the sin itself that's wrong, but it is that covetous heart to yearn for what God has forbidden. That heart that yearns for something that isn't yours, that's coveted. Eve saw the forbidden fruit. And it's right interesting, really, that same Hebrew word is used when it saw it, that she desired it, is that same word here as covet. She coveted the forbidden fruit. And what happened, of course, she ate and thereby sinned. You remember the story in the book of Joshua? The children of Israel went to battle against Jericho. God gave them great victory over the city of Jericho, but they were commanded not to take anything out of the city. Everything was to be given to the Lord. Nothing was to be kept. But there was this man named Achan. And Achan, as they were making their way through the fallen city of Jericho, Achan came across this nice Babylonian garment. I mean, this must have been really something. This nice, expensive Babylonian garment. This little bag of silver and a wedge of gold. And the text says he coveted them. Joshua 7:21. He coveted them, took them, and put them in, really hit them in his tent underneath the ground. That was a sin, we may say, of rebellion or disobedience, because God had said not to take anything. But where did it begin? Not in his hands. It began in his heart, by coveting what God had forbidden. David, walking out over the palace rooftop, looked out and saw Bathsheba bathing. Ended up committing adultery with her. But where did it begin? It began in his heart, by coveting someone that did not belong to him. Do you see how this particular commandment, it reaches back in? As a matter of fact, if you would walk back through the 9 previous commandments, you would see very clearly how this heart of covetousness can cause you to break all the rest of the commandments. You can make an idol out of something and worship it instead of God. You can dishonor the Sabbath day. You can foul God's name, speak evil of God's name, all of these things because you have a heart of covetousness. In the Bible, there's a story of this rich king, wealthy, had lands and power and dominion, but he wanted this little vineyard, just this little garden spot that was next to one of his palaces. But the man who owned it refused to sell it. And he said, "This has been in my family for generations. I don't want to sell this piece of land." But the king coveted that land, that little vineyard. And when the man said no, the king went home and he began to pout like a spoiled, petulant child. His wife came in and saw him with his face to the wall and crying and belly aching and whining because he just couldn't have that little vineyard he wanted. And this wicked woman said, "Don't you worry about it, honey. I'll take care of it." She ended up taking the man that owned the vineyard, slandered him, said he blasphemed God and blasphemed the king. They took the vineyard owner, they took this man, they had him killed and put to death, had his young sons killed and put to death, all so that this spoiled, bloated king could have a little vineyard. This is the story of Ahab, Jezebel, and Naboth's vineyard. Naboth dead. Naboth's sons, young sons, killed and put to death. Why? Because the covetous heart of a spoiled king. God despises covetousness. How many? In fact, I would say all of the 10 commandments, or the other 9 commandments, I guess I should say it that way. The other 9 commandments can all be broken through the covetousness of our fallen hearts. We must be careful not to lust for, yearn for, desire things that do not belong to us. We read in James, if I may find it here, my mind runs to it before I found a text, the book of James. There it is, James chapter number 1. James 1:14. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust. James 1:14. And enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. This is the warning. This is how it begins. That lustful heart, that yearning, that inordinate desire for that which is forbidden or that which does not belong to you, it may begin as something small, but if we dwell on it and we allow our mind to be consumed with it, it becomes covetousness. And that covetous heart will soon give birth to the act of sin itself. Why do many people steal? Because they have a heart full of covetousness. They want it. They've yearned for it. Why do many people lie? Because they want more and more. This is my Wednesday night crowd, and I don't want to beat you up, but just think about it like this. Why do people rob God? Why do people not give? Because of an inordinate affection for money, a love of money, a yearning for money. Mark chapter number 7, if you want to turn there with me, I'm going to read something to you. The Jews had it all messed up. They thought as long as we do right what's on the outside, then we're okay. But this 10th commandment deals with what's on the inside. What's on the inside? Mark chapter number 7, Christ's teaching here. We don't have time to give the background of it, but in Mark 7, verse 20, and he said, "That which cometh out of the man, that defileth the man from within." You notice that in verse 21, "For from within, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts," and do you see that word? "Covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile the man." There's where the heart of covetousness lives, from within us. We must all battle with it. Now, I have said this as we've gone along, and I don't want to wait to the end because I want you to be thinking on this as we make our way through this. I have said all the way through these commandments where there is a divine forbiddance, there is a positive affirmation, or where there's a negative, there's a positive. Thou shalt not kill. So what should we do? We should promote life. Thou shalt not bear false witness. So what should we do on the positive side? Be honest, be truthful. if we say the divine forbiddance is thou shalt not covet, then what is the positive side of that? We should be a contented people, a rejoicing people, a happy people, a people that are satisfied. We sang this song, as poor attempt as it was, only you can satisfy. We sang that in As the deer panteth for the water. Because only God can truly satisfy us. Our great error so often, and this is not limited to the lost. This is certainly inclusive of the child of God too. We convince ourselves, if I only had fill in the blank, then I'd be happy. Well, if you don't find contentment in God, you won't find contentment in material possessions. I promise you that. Ecclesiastes, and I'm trying to talk and turn at the same time. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. Vanity. I will just say again, there's nothing wrong with wanting a nicer house, a nicer car, a nicer place of living. There's nothing wrong with wanting those things and then working hard to try to obtain those things. There's nothing wrong with that. Where it becomes wrong is when it becomes an unhealthy obsession that would lead us to breaking one of the commandments. In other words, I want to have this, and in order to get this, I've got to lie. Then that desire has become covetousness. It's become a sin. I want this so much that I'm willing to steal in order to get it. Whether you rob from other men or rob from God or whatever that it is, I want this so much I'm willing to steal to get it. Then it's not just some innocent wish or want. It has become covetousness. It has become a sin. All of us. And I will say this. I think, and I believe that I'm right. I think this is something, when it comes to the material side, I think that this is something, as you get a little older, you don't battle with quite as much as you did when you were younger. You know, I can remember driving down the road and seeing this big, gorgeous house and thinking, man, I'd love to have that. Now I look at a big, gorgeous house and say, man, I'd hate to keep up with all that. Now, something in between would be all right. You know what I'm saying? Not necessarily a shanty, but not a mansion either. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, I'd like to improve my station. I'd like to have something a little more. As long as we're not willing to give birth to sin in order to have whatever that is. I'm going to ask you, just because I want to do it for the pure meanness sake of it, I want you to turn to the book of Micah in chapter number 2. You want me to tell you where it is, or are you going to use your thumb tabs? The little book of Micah. I'm being a little bit sarcastic, but that's one of those books we don't ever read much from. Old Testament. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah. Micah chapter number 2. Look at verse 1. Micah 2, verse 1. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. In other words, people that just lay around in the bed coming up with crooked ways to get things. When the morning is light, they practice it. They've been thinking all night how to treat. I've got trick or treat stuck in my head, I guess. Cheat or trick someone. And when it comes daylight, they practice it because it is in the power of their hand. Listen, and they covet fields, and they take them by violence, and houses, and take them away. So they oppress a man and his house, even a man and his heritage. Do you see that? Micah warning Israel there not to be covetous, not to sit around and be consumed with an evil, inordinate desire to have something that's not yours. Unfortunately, we must be careful. We must be careful not
Not to confuse a healthy yearning or a healthy desire with covetousness. Unfortunately, and I'll say this, I've got it in my notes. Unfortunately, most of us are more concerned with living the American dream than the sacrificial, cross-bearing life of a Christian. I read a story of a preacher, and this was not him telling, but somebody telling about him. Proverbs says, "Let another's lips praise thee and not thine own." Of this preacher who had, for many years, he and his wife had just lived off a very modest income. They were working and pastoring and working and pastoring, living off this modest income. And God blessed, the church grew. They were able to increase his salary, and this continued to go on for a number of years. But he and his wife decided. I'm not telling you I'm this spiritual, I just tell you right now. But he and his wife decided, you know what? We've lived all these years off that same modest salary. We're going to keep living off that same modest salary. And everything that they received above what they used to get, they gave it away. How many of us would be willing to do something like that? I'm not saying you have to. Do you understand that? I'm not saying that you have. I'm just saying there's a difference between having things and things having you. And too many of us want to live the American dream, retire at 50. But Jesus told a story, didn't he warn some people one time about tearing down your barns and building bigger barns without giving thought to your own soul? And we as Christians ought to give thought not only to our own soul, but the soul of others, and use what God has given us to invest in his kingdom. Do you think that a covetous heart is rare? We'll put a few little 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds in a room together, and it won't take you long to find out that covetousness is part of the fall. What happens when a child, you got a room full of kids and a child picks up one toy? It ain't going to be long, right? Till the other child says, I got to have what this one has. You know how many times a parent hears, but I had it first, right? I guess grandparents don't have to hear any of that. I'm sure you probably do too. But it is part of the Adamic nature, part of that fallen nature we got from Adam, that we have a covetous heart. You give a child an ice cream cone and they're just as happy. They're just as happy as they can be until they see somebody got a hot fudge sundae. And they want to know why they didn't get that. It's just the covetousness of our heart. And I try not to drag too much American politics into the pulpit, but I'm telling you, we're looking at a generation of kids today who are so spoiled and so used to having their own way. They think they're entitled to everything. Little hearts filled with covetousness. Nobody told them no when they were young. And I don't mean all kids. There's some good ones out there. But I like what one person wrote. He said, contentment makes poor men rich. Discontentment makes rich men poor. If you're inclined, look over to 1 Timothy in chapter number 6. 1 Timothy in chapter number 6. I was listening to Alistair Begg. I loved to listen to Alistair Begg. I was listening to Alistair Begg, and he said he was out golfing one day with some men that were not affiliated with his church at all. He was out golfing. And he come to find out that two of the men that he was playing golf with were like investment brokers or whatever they are, guys that deal with big money and investments and these things. And he said once he found that out, he asked him, he said, do your clients, these two men work for some very well-to-do clients. And he asked him, he said, are your clients ever content? Do they ever just have enough? And he said those two men looked at him like he was crazy when he said that. And he said, well, what about you two? Do you two think you ever feel like you've got enough? And he said, you thought they looked at me crazy the first time. They really looked at me crazy when I said that the second time. And Alistair Begg said to them, you know, there is contentment to be found. In fact, he quoted to them, he said, godliness with contentment is great gain. And one of the men said, man, that's really good. Where did you hear that at? And Alistair Begg said, I found it in a book. He said, but let me tell you what book it was. And then he began to witness to them. And that's pretty sharp, right?
Amen.
1 Timothy chapter number 6. And this is what he read. 1 Timothy 6 verse 6 says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. They that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction. For the love of money is the root of all evil. Do you see that? It's not money. Money is just paper, cotton, whatever it's made of. Money is just an inanimate object. It is the love of money. What is the love of money? Covetousness. Covetousness. The love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. How many people are there that have ruined their lives because of a covetous heart? By thinking, I've got to have this, or if I only had that. Spouses who said, man, if I just had that person instead of the one I have, I'd be so much better off. Is it possible even to sit in church and battle with covetousness? And to say, I wonder where she got that nice new dress, that nice new outfit. I wish I had something like that. Or to see somebody pull up in the churchyard with a new car and to be covetous of it. If only I had. There's a television show that came on that Pat and I used to watch. And it was called The Closer. Some of you may have seen it and may have watched. Pretty good show. It's not as filthy as a lot of them are. It was on The Closer. The lady, she was this detective on the show, and she was really the main character on the show. She had this husband. And I mean, he was just the ideal husband. I mean, he never complained about anything. He was so patient with her. I mean, it was, she would lie to him. She would mistreat him. She would dump on him. I mean, she treated him terrible. Anything to advance her career, she would do and walk all over him. And I heard women say, he's just the perfect husband. He's just the perfect husband. And I thought, y'all do realize this is television, right? I mean, seriously. Do you want a man that would let you walk all over him like that? But it's tempting. He's just so perfect. Hey, it's a soap opera. Wake up. It's not real life. And this person you may think is so great, grass is not always greener on the other side. We're not to lust our neighbor's property, our neighbor's wife, his car, his house, his possessions, none of these things. We're not to covet, not to lust after them. This, again, this great commandment points us towards the Lord Jesus Christ, because answer this question, how many of us have been guilty of this? And the answer, all of us. All of us have broken God's law. We have a covetous spirit. Now, if you think about this, there's something really rich here. Christ never. This is the beauty of the active righteousness of Christ. He never coveted one time. Never once. And he lived the life we should have lived, died the death we should have died. And our sin of breaking number 1, 2, 3, and all the way to 10, he paid for our sin dead at Calvary. And that's how much he loved us. He never coveted, but we did, so we need a redeemer. The law had said, thou shalt not covet. The Apostle Paul said, I thought I was all right until I got to that 10th commandment. You remember Romans 7, verse 7? Paul said, I thought I was doing pretty good until I got to the law and said, thou shalt not covet. The Bible says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Things that are in the world, lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, they are not of God, but they are of this world. And this world is just vanishing away, it's fleeting away. Don't love the things of this world. I put this in my notes. You want to know one of the best antidotes for being a covetous person? Be content and be a giver. Find contentment. Want what you have. Want what you have. Delight in what you have. And then be a giver. Give away. Give things away. Give away money. Give away possessions. See if you have a handle on them or if they have a handle on you. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. We ought to be able to stand and sing, I'm a child of the King. I'm a child of the King. My Father owns it all. Why I want to covet what somebody else has when my Father owns it all? A very successful businessman, having closed a very lucrative deal, was out walking along the beach one day. And he saw a fisherman sitting on the end of his boat. And this businessman said to him, sir, why aren't you out catching fish? The fisherman said, I've already caught all the fish I need for the day. But the businessman said, but you could go out and catch more fish, sell them, make more money, buy a bigger boat, get better nets. If you do that long enough, you could be successful like I am, even get you a fleet of fishing boats. And the fisherman said, well, what would I do then? And the rich businessman said, well, then you could just sit back and enjoy life. And the fisherman said, what do you think I'm doing? Wouldn't that be great if that would be true of us? Are you enjoying life? Have you found contentment in what God has given you? In a world where, and I'm closing, in a world where the Ten Commandments have become obsolete, where they've been removed. You remember us talked about this been a while ago, right? When Ten Commandments being removed, statues torn down, run over, taken out of the courtroom, out of the schoolhouse. In a world where the Ten Commandments have become obsolete, and even a small number of believers even can quote the Ten Commandments, what a privilege it is to study them and see how they point us towards Jesus. And how he kept the law, and how we find God's grace and forgiveness in our failings and in the perfect righteousness of the Lord Jesus Christ. Thank God for our wonderful Savior.